Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening. And this week, we're in conversation with Rachel Prince.
Rachel, you're a women's fitness and pelvic health coach. You're also a co-founder of an inspired new brand, which we'll definitely get onto in a few moments. But first of all, can you talk to us about your work in women's pelvic health? I think we all know by now how essential the pelvic floor is, regardless of gender, whether we've had children or not, and how we've delivered any children if we have had them. But I'd really like to know more about the specific protocols that you've developed, the reborn approach, and what you refer to as the strong, free, uplifted method.
Yeah, thanks, Sophie. Also, pleasure being here today. So I got into pelvic health because of my own journey through fertility and miscarriage. I won't go into too much depth on that now, but specifically with what I do, it's really a holistic view. Over the past 6 or 7 years, I've really understood that it's not just about the physical. When you're dealing with pelvic floor issues, especially prolapse, it can be all-consuming. So much goes into like how women feel around their pelvic floor, essentially. And most of us didn't even know about our pelvic floor until we were pregnant. So that's crazy in itself. So I went back through my changing career, which was 7 years ago, and started going back to my clients and asking them what their biggest problems were, like what were their biggest obstacles. There were three main things that kept coming up. And the biggest one was fear. So fear of making things worse, them hurting themselves if they lifted weights, symptoms presenting even further. There's just so many limiting beliefs that women have that lifting weights will make their pelvic floor worse, make their symptoms worse, make them leak more, make their prolapse symptoms worse. So that was like one of the biggest things. Then the second thing was their knowledge and confidence around then what to do. So where do they start? How do they progress? What is safe? They're so overwhelmed with all the information out there. And the reality is, for example, diastasis recti gets talked about a lot at the moment. And I think prolapse is coming up there, but definitely in the last 5 to 10 years, it hasn't had much of a spotlight. So a lot of women get most of their information from Instagram or Google, and a lot of it is very fear-mongering and not evidence-based. So that knowledge and confidence piece was quite a big thing. And then just generally body image and motivation. Especially when we've had kids, our bodies can feel very alien. So I kind of just sat down and from that thought, like, what do women actually need? It's really not just about the rehab. It's about like how do we help women more holistically? And from that, I thought, right, well, there's three things we're thinking of here, right? So there's the mindset, emotional energy piece. How can we make women more resilient and instill the confidence and belief in them that they can do this and get them to build long-lasting habits that support their goals, but also what they need to do in life, particularly when it comes to raising children. The second bit was the movement piece. So creating a progressive strength training program that not only incorporated lifting weights, but also more of the breath work, the foundational work, and also some corrective exercise. And lifting weights is important because Kegels or pelvic floor exercises, they aren't enough alone. The pelvic floor is still a muscle. It still needs challenge to adapt. And Kegels alone might be too much for women, depending on their tendencies, which I'm sure we'll get onto. And then the last bit was, when it comes to pelvic floor issues, and even core issues, it's not a quick fix. It takes a really, really long time for a lot of women. And that's not to scare women, but it's to just be a bit more realistic. And women can't have their hands held forever. So I wanted to give them the freedom, essentially, so the knowledge and education piece for them, so they can become more self-aware about their bodies and become more empowered, because then they know what to do. They know how to adapt their movement, how to tweak, how to test and retest as they move along, so that they can do it on their own, if that makes sense. So, yeah. So I guess really it's like that holistic piece, the foundations, plus the functional strength, and then support them with the resources that they can like refer back to so they can do it on their own.
Can you talk to us about any specific clients you've had where it seemed like all hope was lost and working with you, things have turned around? In other words, the more extreme cases from vaginal and or anal prolapse through to extreme incontinence. Who are the people you've worked with where they've thought this is never going to work and through your method it has? Can you bring it to life a little bit with some storytelling?
I always go back to one in particular because this is the one client that made me solely niche down into helping women with pelvic floor dysfunction. And actually, I hate using that word because we're not dysfunctional. Mm, pelvic floor has adapted and changed through things that happened in life. So I won't mention a name, but we can call her S. Let's say I'm just like referencing gossip and a girl now. Yeah. We can call her S. So during COVID, I was doing a giveaway on my Instagram, and I was giving away a free consult specifically with regard to either pregnancy or postpartum. S won the giveaway, and at the time I was doing pre-postnatal more generally, and my program was actually called at the time the Reborn Postpartum Method, so it wasn't specific to the pelvic floor alone. And I had the consult with her, and she was telling me her story. Like, the first thing I do was always just let women speak, try to understand what their beliefs are about themselves, like what they've been going through in their journey, not just physically, but just mentally, emotionally, and just the stresses they have in life. And she was telling me about how she got diagnosed with a prolapse, and the GP told her that she shouldn't lift any weights, including her kids. And I hear that a lot, and it really upsets me, because how can you not lift your children? So she was talking through that, and then one day she was having to move heavy furniture, because I think she was moving house or like switching stuff around in the room or something, but she was lifting heavy furniture and then she just felt something go, and then she like panicked and went back, and her prolapse had got worse. And then she burst into tears, and she didn't realise how much it had affected her until she was talking through it on that consult. And then it made me cry. And I was telling her how, like, you know, there's no evidence around lifting weights or strength training making prolapse worse. If anything, you need to get back to it, because life is harder. You were lifting furniture and then you felt this get worse, and then any new symptoms did get worse. And from that, I just made a choice. Like, she said I was the first person that gave her hope. And from that, I just made a decision there and then to just delve deeper into helping women solely with pelvic floor issues. So whether it's incontinence or prolapse or pelvic pain, get back into strength training and really narrow down in that area. She then went through the program. It was 3 months, and she said it was one of the most life-changing things she's ever done. And she got to a point where she was lifting heavier weights than she had even before babies. I think, to be clear, it's not a quick fix. Like I've said before, her symptoms haven't disappeared. They've greatly reduced. She's training. She's lifting heavier than she has before. More importantly, she knows what to do and how to manage it. And she knows how to adapt her workouts accordingly. Mm-hmm. And she does lift her kids, and she does play, and she does do the gardening and all these other things that are harder than structured exercise. So I think that's always the one that is very, very close to my heart, because it's essentially what made me switch tack.
I love that, and such a powerful story. You're a specialist in pelvic organ prolapse and diastasis recti, and I don't think people realise how common both of these problems are. Would you mind explaining both of these to listeners, including any signs or symptoms to look out for?
Yeah, sure. So let's start with diastasis recti. It tends to be the one that's more visible and easier to see. So diastasis recti occurs when your six-pack muscle, so this is your rectus abdominis muscle, so think of it as the two sheets, the superficial muscle on top of your abdomen, that runs vertically down, and they do separate from each other, so they're not like a one giant muscle. And along the midline, so all the way down through your belly button, you have what's called the linea alba. So you can think of that as a sheet of connective tissue, essentially, which holds the two six-pack muscles together, the rectus muscles. So during pregnancy, this stretches and thins, which leads to this separation, which is completely normal. And in 100% of cases of pregnancies that get to term, there will be some level of diastasis recti. For some, this will naturally come back together in the postpartum period. And there's been a lot of research on this. 6 weeks postpartum, which typically women think of as this, the GP check, and that's that magic milestone to then be able to go and do exercise. It's not, but that's a whole other conversation. 6% of women will have this six-pack muscle, this rectus, come back together by 6 weeks. But for a third of women, they'll still have it a year postpartum. So it's completely normal. It's a part of childbearing. There are factors that will make it more likely to have diastasis than others, including multiple pregnancies. But it's not something to be afraid of. And actually doing the rehab, getting back into training, it was all hugely important to make the tissue stronger. And I think with diastasis, there's two things. Everyone focuses a lot on the gap. So the separation itself, which is the width, let's say, but there's also the depth that's hugely important. So, you know, how far your fingers can go down into your abdomen. And what we really want to do is get that connective tissue strong so that women can manage pressure better and get back into their training. And in terms of symptoms for diastasis, it's more visible, like I said. So most women will see either like a bulge or coning or doming down the midline. So if you think about when you get up from sitting, maybe, or lying down on the ground, you might see kind of little dome or cone from your midline, or the gap or separation itself. If you put your fingers along your midline, you might feel like the two ridges of the rectus muscle that are further apart. So those are the things that's mainly for diastasis. And then specific to prolapse. So prolapse occurs when the pelvic organ, so that's your bladder, your uterus or your rectum, that will descend or protrude down into the vagina. So in its simplest forms, I would just think about the vaginal wall stretching and dropping. So more like a change in tissue. I think that's the best way to describe it that doesn't evoke fear. And again, natural things that happen during your life, like childbirth, can lead to that. For prolapse specifically, the most obvious things to look out for are that feeling of heaviness. So that's what most women feel, is like a feeling of heaviness down below or pressure in the pelvis. Others will actually feel a bulge or see a bulge, like visibly, depending on the level of prolapse they have. And other things such as, just in terms of the pelvic floor and its strength, some, I think, difficulty inserting a tampon is always one that I hear, like they feel like it's slipping out. That's another symptom that's key to look out for.
I love how, Rachel, you're being so mindful of the language and the words that you use, so that there's less shame attached to some of these things that so many of us go through, as Sophie said, whether or not we've had children. So thank you. On behalf of women everywhere, thank you for that. There are loads of pelvic floor training devices and technologies out there. What do you rate, if anything?
So I'm not a pelvic floor physio. Whilst I've done many physio-led courses and professional development, I'm not a physio itself, so I don't prescribe personally, but I always work really closely with pelvic floor physios myself if clients have them. If they don't, I will tend to redirect them to one that can support them. But given most women don't really know how to do pelvic floor exercises, or tend to do them suboptimally, let's say, again, back to language, I'd say a lot of women just get other muscles involved. Squeezing their bum tends to be the biggest one. Yeah. So when women are struggling to connect with their pelvic floor, I'll tend to suggest they talk to their physio about biofeedback devices for pelvic floor training. This is more to help with correct technique or just motivation in doing them, because we all know that doing pelvic floor exercises is boring. Let's face it. No one really wants to sit there doing their pelvic floor exercises.
So glad you said that, not us.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with breath work, because yeah. I'm obsessed with breath work and everyone's like, breath work's boring. I'm like, it's really not. And it's about how to fit it into their routine. You make it something that is not a chore. So I think for technical motivation, rather than devices for those who, I guess, struggle with actual contraction, so that's the strength. I know some clients have been using the LV or the Kegel 8 as, not prescribed, but as recommended by their physios. I think more generally, though, with my clients, because my clients tend to be pretty active, they will have a pessary. So the pessary will really help support them, particularly if they're keen runners. So pessary, if for those that don't know what that is, they can come in different forms. There's a rubber ring, there's like a cube. Most of my clients will have the rubber ring variety, which essentially you put inside and it offers support to the organs. So some clients will just put it in for runs and they take it out just to give that support. Others use more regularly depending on their symptoms.
And this is for women who have got a prolapse currently?
This is for women that have got prolapse, yes.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
So I'm a massive fan of getting women back to doing exactly what they want to do and also what they need to do, rather than telling them what they shouldn't. which also, again, is backed by no evidence. So with prolapse, for me, it's more about where are you right now in your journey? What have you done so far? So your baseline, because you don't want to go from doing nothing to everything. So understanding like where you are right now, symptom free, and then giving the right level of challenge at the right time rather than doing nothing or too much too soon. Because if you're doing nothing, you're deconditioned and you're deconditioning the muscle. And again, the muscle still needs to strengthen.
You've got some great content on your website, and I especially like your blog where you ask women how well they know their pelvic floor and you ask them to engage with it by, for example, doing certain exercises while feeling around their perineum, inserting a finger, using a mirror while doing a pelvic floor exercise. Can you talk us through all of this?
That was a long time ago, I think. That was one of the video, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So this is where we get up close and personal, if women feel comfortable to, obviously. So I tend to think of it as a four-step process. Not all women will want to do everything. Again, it depends on your level of comfort with your own body. But I would encourage every woman to get very comfortable with their body, especially after children. So there's four steps. There's just the awareness piece. There's the biofeedback piece, visuals, and testing strength. So if I go through those in turn, just from an awareness piece, that's just really trying to get women centered around what is going on with their pelvic floor. So get in a comfortable position. This could be lying on your back. It could be sitting. I think lying on your back is just tends to be just more relaxed anyway. So you could just be lying on your bed, sofa, whatever. And then thinking about just what's going on with your breath. So, right, just observing, right? So when you breathe, like how does your pelvic floor respond? Does it lift on the exhale, which it should do, like marginally? We're not looking for massive contractions here, but just naturally, when you breathe, does it lift on the exhale and does it drop on the inhale? And you can try different breathing strategies. You can do something more forceful. You can give a bigger inhale. Like, what do you feel? So that's just bringing awareness to how the pelvic floor should rise and fall with the breath. Then there is, well, if we're going to try a pelvic floor exercise or a Kegel, then how does that feel? So when you inhale, do you feel a gentle relaxation and lengthen? And then when you exhale, can you try and actually give a little squeeze and a lift? So many cues for this could be sucking in a blueberry, holding gas. It depends on the person in terms of what cues work for them. But can you feel it rise and how long can you hold it? What do you notice with your breath? Do you notice any tension around the muscles around your hips? Like I mentioned, glute squeezing tends to be a massive one because ideally we want to try and do this without getting all those other muscles involved. And then when you lengthen and inhale, can you gently push the pelvic floor down and feel that a slight downward pressure? And again, what's going on with your breath at the time? So it's just getting women used to the awareness of this is what my pelvic floor does and how it should feel. And then the next thing in terms of biofeedback is just stay where you are and then place your hand on your perineum. And as you exhale and lift, can you feel it rise away from your hand, your perineum? And then on inhale, can you feel it drop back? So that just gives you kind of that real-time feedback on your movement in terms of moving away from your fingers. The other thing is then the visual feedback. So go somewhere private, remove your clothing, repeat all these things that you've been doing already, but you can do it looking in front of the mirror or you can use your phone if you feel comfortable. So on the contraction, can you see your perineum moving away from the phone mirror? And on lengthening, does it move more towards it? This is all about the observing either from touch or visuals. And then the last thing, which is the thing that gets very up close and personal, is the feeling and testing strength. A lot of women can't get to pelvic health physio all the time. Some women can't afford it either at certain points, especially because the NHS waitlist is quite long and some private can be too expensive. So if you wanted to feel and test strength yourself, then if you feel comfortable, you could insert a lubricated finger into your vaginal opening. And when you contract, you should feel your lips closing around your finger and your... If you think about when you put your finger in your mouth, basically, like your mouth lips, obviously, closing around your finger, then as you, I'm literally doing it right now, and then your tongue lifting it back up, it's the same idea. So if you insert a finger, do you feel that squeeze around your finger in a lift in that order? And how does it feel? Does it feel strong? Does it feel weak? If you change your breath, does it change anything in terms of like your, a contraction? And then think about how long you can hold it for, how many lifts you can do before you start to tire, your pelvic floor starts to tire, because that then helps to understand a bit of a baseline of where you are right now.
Thank you so much. And I think, as you said, it's about getting comfortable with doing these things. I think so many of us are still squeamish about our own bodies, which is just ridiculous. But I guess that's social conditioning as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've mentioned brilliantly, because we wanted to ask you about this, exercise and protecting our pelvic floor. I was always told, as you've said, don't exercise, be careful. So how can women protect their pelvic floor while lifting weights? Because we know now that deadlifting, lifting weights, is now very much a thing for peri- and postmenopausal women, for all women, in fact. Being strong is so important. Could we be doing more harm than good? I'm guessing you're going to say no on that, but how do we protect our pelvic floor while weightlifting?
I guess the real answer is it depends, because you can do too much too soon, obviously. But inherently, lifting weights is not bad for your pelvic floor. It's necessary. And I'll go back to the life is harder point, because it is. And you're right, lifting weights is hugely important, both for men and women, for longevity. But if anyone has listened to Peter Attia, like I have many times, the things that we need to do now to be able to get off the toilet when we're 80 is incredible, right? So for me, it's more around, I'll go back to that, where are you right now, and establishing that first. And but also, what are you doing day to day? So how I always say to clients, because I do work with mums, so all my clients have children, how much do your kids weigh? Are you lifting them? You know, if you think about one point where, you know, you've got a 25 kilogram 6 or 7 year old who is fighting with a 4 year old who's about 15 kilograms, and then they both want to be carried at the same time, you're essentially doing a mismatch on weighted carry, and they're wriggly. It's so much harder. So we want to make structured exercise harder so that your life becomes easier, firstly. But then going back to understanding where you are now, you don't have to go from, well, firstly, a squat. When you get up from a sofa or a chair, you're squatting. So you're doing a squat anyway. But you don't have to go from a body weight squat or a sit to stand straight into front squatting 50 kg. You progressively load from what your starting point is, understand what your pelvic floor can handle and what your symptom threshold is what I always refer to. So I always want clients to teeter on that fence of symptoms. For some clients, they're happy to just go into the symptoms a little bit. For some, they want to completely avoid. But start from what their baseline is and then progressively load accordingly. The other thing is symptoms will always change and fluctuate. It's never going to be linear. Menstrual cycle, but also you've had a bad night's sleep, stress. Like, there's going to be situations where on some days you might be able to lift heavy, on other days you might not. So it's really understanding your baseline, finding a plan for symptom exacerbation and how to manage that, because no 2 days will be the same. But then also work with a trainer or a pelvic floor physio that can give you empowered evidence-based advice and a program that will help. Because it's not always about erring on the side of caution, which is don't lift anything. Your muscle needing stimulus to adapt is important, but you just need to find the right support in the right way. From a foundational perspective, I always start with the breath and pressure management. So lay those foundations first, because your pelvic floor does work with your diaphragm, which sits underneath your ribcage, their muscles of respiration. And so if you've got that foundation working well and you can manage pressure well, then that progressive program becomes a lot easier for you.
Yeah. And as you were saying before, even if somebody has a prolapse, if they do absolutely nothing at all, no pelvic floor exercises, no other exercises, all of their muscles will, what was the word you used, decondition. So we should be exercising everything. So yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is every exercise or every movement can be scaled and tweaked. I always say modify before eliminating. Do something different, try a different strategy, whether that's breath, foot positioning, load, intensity. There's so many variables that women have, or people in general, have at their disposal. Do something different first to see if it helps to reduce those symptoms or any kind of aches and discomfort you're feeling before just completely eliminating. Because I think it's just too easy to go, oh, I feel something now, that's it, done. And then the fear comes back, and then you get into this awful vicious cycle.
I think what we can do is we can put on the show notes some YouTube examples of pelvic floor physios who do, as you've said, modified exercises so that you're still exercising. It's just you're modifying a certain exercise to make sure that pelvic floor is protected. And then you can build up and build up as the strength builds up. So yeah, thank you.
You're also the co-founder of Luco with dear friend and colleague of mine, Dr. Joe Menny. And this is all about really clean, targeted protein powders specifically designed for women. We both think they're fabulous, but please tell us more, the inspiration, the product range, and also how the range differs from other products available on the market.
Yeah, sure. So we built Luco not just as a protein powder company. It was more around women's health brand, of which right now our aim is to revolutionise the plant-based protein industry. And as you alluded to, we all love Dr. Joe Menny, my co-founder as well. So we have doctor-led formulations that are designed for women's unique needs. So our mission is really to empower women with science-backed nutrition for their well-being and long-term health and hormonal health. So this really stemmed from a time when we were going through our own journeys and specific life stages. So Joe had been going through an IVF pregnancy. I was pregnant myself. I was training her while she was pregnant. So we were both going through a journey at the same time. And then postnatally, I'd started work again 4 months after my second, Alba, and then immediately started training Joe again after she had her lovely boy. And there was a moment where I was training her and we were just so depleted. Milk supply reducing, we were feeling just really, the energy levels were just so low. And I was having a bit of a moan because I've got an eldest sibling as well of Alba's, and I just didn't have any time to fuel myself. I was basically just eating a lot of pombez. I just knew that that
been there.
Pombez are delicious. I'm not taking away from pombez. They're not exactly nutritious. And I knew how much protein I needed extra, for example, at the time for breastfeeding. I was one that did take protein powders. And Joe and I had a conversation about how protein powders out there are just filled with a load of rubbish. So either loads of added sugar or sweeteners or emulsifiers, stabilizers, just loads of ultra processed. And for a lot of them, just a hugely long list of ingredients no one can understand. So actually, for a lot of time, particularly around my gut health, I would end up feeling worse, not better, with the powders that we had. So it was just one day over WhatsApp, going back and forth, we just decided to do it ourselves. And then 3 years down the line, here we are. Our aim is to make products specifically for women that are clean and effective and are built to truly nourish your body. So in terms of the right dosings for women, the right micronutrients, vitamins and minerals that women need. Eventually, we want to span into different life stages, including menopause. But for now, we've got two products. One is more like a daily all-in-one solution. So it gives you your plant-based protein, high in fiber, but also has like replaces the need for 11 supplements because we've put those in there. And that one's actually certified suitable for use during pregnancy and breastfeeding. And then the other one, Perform, which is more of the post-exercise solution. Again, high in fiber, packed with 20 grams of your organic plant-based protein, and it replaces the need for 8 supplements. So that's much more about fueling yourself after physical activity. And that one actually has creatine and CoQ10 in it as well, which are hero ingredients.
Yeah, I want to ask you about creatine, actually, because I'm noticing a lot of people now talking about creatine for women. Actually, can I tack on another question as well? Because I wonder, had you had a conversation, you and Joe, around plant-based protein versus animal-based protein? Because I think there's a lot of chit-chat around which is better as well. So I'd be curious to know your thoughts on that too.
We decided to go plant-based for, well, a few reasons. One, just from a sustainability angle. Two, because there is a much bigger movement towards vegan as well. But also three, from a whey perspective, we do know like a lot of women can't stomach whey that well. So it was those three things that really led us down the plant-based route. And the plant-based route is a lot harder to formulate in terms of taste and texture. It's one of the reasons it took 3 years, but those are the main reasons why. Creatine is a naturally occurring compound in your body. It helps produce quick energy during high-intensity workouts. That's what most people know it for, although there's this big myth that, and I guess it comes down to what people see in the media, that creatine's for men, it'll make you really bulky. that's not the case. It is one of the, I think it's the most studied supplement in sports nutrition. It is completely safe and effective. There's been something like over 680 plus research papers, peer-reviewed research papers on it, and more coming out. One came out actually more recently, and the International Society of Sports Nutrition released a press release actually in February saying, like an immediate release, basically saying everyone should be taking creatine, I think was generally the consensus of that. And it's been hyped in the fitness world for a long time with the focus on men, but it's just as beneficial for women. So not only can it improve your strength, power and performance from a exercise perspective, it also is hugely important for cognitive function. So there was a research paper, or I think a couple actually, research papers done in the last year under how it can improve brain health and cognitive performance under stress and sleep deprivation. So it can help, and it can help with energy, it can help with mood, different phases of the menstrual cycle has been research done on that. It's also been researched to see how it can help improve symptoms of depression, even postnatally. It's just a brilliant supplement. I take it every single day. I think in terms of how to use it, there still needs to be more research and dosings, particularly because of a research paper that came out in March that actually almost has risen a lot of questions now around the dosing in terms of lean muscle mass increases specifically. I won't go into that into too much detail, but more generally, there's the optimal recommendation right now, and still that's stood by in terms of the ISSN, so the International Society of Sports and Nutrition statement in February, is 3 to 5 grams daily is all you really need for health. But I think from a dosing perspective, there's firstly, women are underrepresented in research, we know that anyway. And yeah, there still needs to be more done on the female physiology. But I take 3 grams daily. And there's 3 grams in Perform as well.
The creatine is in your Perform formulation?
Yes, it is, yeah.
And I'm going to tag on another question onto that. Do you cycle your creatine?
No, so I mean, for me, it's been relatively new because I've been waiting for our product to come out. I wasn't actually taking it just as a separate supplement. The loading phase is really more about it's not necessary for everyone. It tends to be more for those that are really into their strength training and more kind of bodybuilding. So that is a 5-day, you take 5 grams 4 times a day for the first 5 days, and then you go down to your standard 3 to 5 grams a day dose. I have not done that, but I'm using it for optimal health rather than anything else. I'm doing Hyrox in May, but I'm not a bodybuilder and I'm not someone that necessarily thinks they need to do that. I mean, I could be wrong, but like I said, there's so much going in to this research, and the recent research paper has concluded that there needs to be more done in terms of what is optimal dosing for creatine for specifically muscle.
It's something that my PT and I talked about, because I do quite a lot of strength training. I don't actually take creatine on a regular basis at the moment, although I have just recently started trying your supplement. But I was just wondering what your view was on that.
Yeah, I think because now like the research is conflicting some of the old research, I guess it's, for me, just there needs to be more done. There needs to be more done on it, and particularly with regard to the female physiology and what we need.
Completely agree.
Because if you think about it, with our protein powders, the dosings that we've put in are different from what men need, just in terms of the vitamins and minerals, your B12, your choline, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So understanding, like trying to get some more female specific research on creatine and for the different use cases, because it's not just about muscle, is it? It's about performance and high intensity, and it's about cognition, it's about focus, it's about mood. And there's so many things. But I think for general health, if you're starting to take 3 to 5 grams daily, it's obviously not going to do any harm. It's only going to do good. But it's, I think, comes down to the individual and what they're wanting to get out of it.
So this podcast is all about finding out how other people age well. So I'm intrigued by your morning routine. What do you do from the moment you wake up? Can you talk us through your best habits, any favourite devices you might use, products, brands, supplements?
Yeah, I am. I mean, ever since Luco launched, my daily routine has been all over the place. I'll just be very honest. I try to keep consistent, but the reality is no 2 days are the same by the nature of a kind of single parenting, juggling kids, work schedules, clients, 2 businesses. But I do have non-negotiables, one being movement. So the reality is I really have to time block at the moment, 1 day to the next. for me to actually make sure I'm getting in all the stuff that I want to get in. But I guess a typical day for me, or morning for me, would be getting up with the kids, obviously now really early because it's so light. So you welcome the spring, but then you hate the fact that they're like bouncing around at 5 a.m. So I'll get up with the kids. I'll do my, I guess, skincare routine, wash my face as usual. And then I will tend to try and get my water and electrolytes in straight away and get outside. So really important to me is getting in those light units for my circadian rhythm and rehydrating after sleep. I know a lot of people just reach for the coffee, but we know that cortisol can damper down over the first hour. So you don't actually need your coffee within the first hour. What you really should be doing is replacing all the fluids and the salts. So I try to do that. I'm trying to get in my 30 grams of protein within 30 minutes of waking to try and stabilize my cortisol as well. And I usually have my caffeine after that. So because I can't really stomach anything, and I've never been this like a big breakfast person, especially when I've just wake up, that's when I'll have my kind of Leuco shake and I'll add some other stuff to it just to get up to 30 grams. And it's usually smoothie based. And then I'll tend to have my clients and try and fit in exercise where I can. I'm definitely a morning person when it comes to exercise. And to go back to the whole pelvic floor exercises being boring and breathwork being boring, something that I find really useful is whenever, because I exercise, let's say 4 to 5 times a week anyway, I will always do breathwork, and I do it with my clients as well. I'll do my breathwork as the warm-up every single time. So that's an easy way to get in your calming the nervous system, getting your body ready for exercise, doing your pelvic floor exercises, but it also just makes me all kind of energized and focused for the day and then do my workout before I have to end up sitting down at a desk to do a lot of the startup work for the day. Trying to get movement in first is quite a big thing for me. And actually more recently, because I'm training for HYROX in May, I'm trying to get really on top of my nutrition and recovery habits because my training levels have upped quite a lot. So there's a lot more around how I'm sorting my own meal timing at the moment. So that's hugely important. You asked about products, did you, as well?
Mm.
So products, well, obviously my Leuco. I have my Leuco every day. Perform on the days I'm working out, Nourish for the days I'm not. I'll add creatine into the Nourish to make sure I'm having it every day. Electrolytes, I've been trying a few different ones from the health marketplace at the moment. I've recently got some energy gels to help with my workouts as well, just where I don't have time to fuel just before. Omega-3, I've actually started taking omega-3 more recently, the Inessa brand. I don't take any other supplements. The reason I take omega-3 is because we did try to put it in our product and there's no way you can make that taste good. There is no way. So I buy that separately, but all the other supplements I need are in Leuco, so I don't need to take anything else. And I'm really terrible at using my Apple Watch in terms of movement and things, but I do have a MyZone, which I use to track my...
So do I.
My, do you?
I love it.
So I'm in my Hall of Fame era right now, and I use that to track my workouts.
Amazing. I'm Hall of Fame as well. I just checked.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, we should connect to my zone.
We should.
Rachel, just a tack-on question, actually. How much protein in grams do you aim for a day? Is it 30 grams? Because, again, I'm hearing so much about women needing to top load and go up to 70 grams a day, 60 grams a day or whatever, based on their weight, obviously. How many grams do you aim for?
The 30 grams is just to get it in the morning.
Right.
So this is about more of the distribution of protein. And actually having more of an even distribution has been shown by research to improve muscle protein synthesis, particularly in women. And also just the timing of post-exercise as well. I'll try and get it within 30 to 45 minutes afterwards. Try and get about 15 grams before. So it's more around like how am I distributing it in the day rather than it being very kind of top heavy into one specific meal. But from a protein level perspective, especially if you're an active female, there's a lot of research on this. The recommended daily allowance for protein per day is 0.75 grams per kilogram of body weight. That hasn't been updated for a very long time. And that is not how much you need. That is basically the minimum amount you need to stop yourself getting sick, if you think about it that way. For me, and if you're active, you really want to be looking at about 1.6 as your base.
Per kilogram of weight.
Yeah, exactly. That could be up to 2.4 depending on your training levels. So I weigh about 60 kilograms. I need at least between 95 and 100 grams daily. On my training days, particularly because they are quite intense training, I try and aim for about 130. And that is a lot. It's a lot to get in.
Will you do Luco once for 30 grams and then the rest in food? Or do you do take Luco twice or three times even?
So I have taken it twice, as in Nourish and Perform. So for example, I have had Nourish, that they have been formulated so they can be taken together, just to be clear. So you're not kind of doing yourself a disservice. Obviously, everyone should try and get as much as they can from a whole foods diet. It is not a food replacement. It is a supplement. To your earlier point around what the big conversation on protein, there's a lot of chat about it recently. And a lot of people say, you know, as a nation, the UK doesn't have a protein deficiency. Sure, that's true as a nation, but what are we comparing it against, and what about everyone's individual goals and their lifestyles? I think the reality is, and the customers that we have, it's just very hard to get that level in if we're really busy and juggling. We can barely get out of the house in the morning just trying to get the kids out and going to work, and it becomes really difficult. So it's there to support. So there have been days where I've used both, once in the morning, once after exercise, just to help, and then get all the rest from the whole foods. I try as much to not double dose, let's say. But that's mainly because I'm trying to get better at my own nutrition. But it's really hard. It is really hard. And I've actually been started working with our resident nutritionist for Luco, Melanie Wilkinson. She's brilliant. Specifically because of my training for Hyrox, and I want to get my nutrition up. And I'm working in the area of protein. And on our first consult, she said to me, you know you're getting half of what you need right now. And I'm like, I know. And that's even with Luco. So I'm having to time block my meals right now to make sure I'm like getting even like a mid-morning snack and an afternoon snack that just keeps it topped up.
I'm going to go back to your sort of morning routine. What about skincare? What are, if any, the hero brands and products you'd never be without? And are you open to any treatments or tweakments?
Yes, so my skincare routine is all courtesy of my wonderful co-founder, Dr. Jo Menny. So I went through quite a stressful period like a year ago, and my skin really just started to go completely crazy. So I've been using a lot of skincare products since, and they've really helped. So Budgie is the one that I have pretty much as a staple. So the Cleansy Derm Clarifying Sea Serum, I think it is. The Retinol 1% as well. So I use those every single day. But just from a daily moisturiser perspective, I just go for CeraVe eye cream. And then from an evening perspective, I use Allies of Skin, the nightly treatment. But yeah, I'm always open to treatments and tweakments. I think, as you described it, I love that, treatments and tweakments. And actually, obviously, this is where my co-founder comes in handy. But I'm very open to trying new things and seeing how my body reacts. Yeah. I've also had Profhilo. I'm not ready for anything like Botox yet, but I have done Profhilo.
Like me, you're obviously hugely busy. We've covered your morning routine, but I think by the evening, things can sometimes feel a little different once the days hit you. How do you switch off at night, and what's your relationship like with sleep?
So I used to be much better at my sleep hygiene before Luco launched. I'm trying to get it back now. I'm the type of person, actually, Joe finds it really hilarious. Everyone has a way of working, you know, when you've got your Chrome open and how many tabs you have open on the screen. Mm-hmm. I have so many tabs.
So do I.
Snap.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like my to-do list or my inspiration list, things I'm not quite
honestly
ready to do yet.
Jo looks at it and when we're working together and she's like, how can you live like this? I'm like, it's the only way I know how to live. So having all these tabs on my Chrome is how my brain works. So in the same way, like I'm always so unbelievably wired and I know my brain will not switch off at night if I'm working late.
Do you not freak out though if your laptop does, and you too, Sophie, if your laptop does a reboot and then it closes them all down? You're like, no, that is...
Oh my God, yes, I have to be like, restore. Yes. Yeah, 100%.
I also really have better. It on my mobile as well. So if I ever have a few minutes, say I'm sitting on a train and I've got some time to kill, I'll look through my tabs to see what's in there that I'd parked that I should have a little look at again.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my God, yeah, 100%.
But my messages, I'm really diligent about, they're all cleared. Very rarely do I leave things till the next day on messages. It would do my head. I see some people who have like hundreds of unread WhatsApps and messages. That I couldn't deal with. But tabs open, I think that's inspiring.
Yeah. it's just insight into how my brain works as well. So if I'm working late, those tabs will just continue to just like spiral out of control. So I'll have really, really disrupted sleep the next day. And then that just actually makes me less productive for then the next 24 hours when I need to be working again. So given how early I start work, so I usually start work at 7 a.m. And that's partly because I'll try and fit in some of my long-standing clients. I still really value that part of my life. I'll try and cut off any work where possible by 9 p.m. Unless it's like life or death, I will try and cut off anything by 9 p.m. so I can start to wind down. I've been testing actually quite recently because I've been waking up just feeling very tired a lot. And I've been testing what my actual optimal sleep time is and what that sweet spot is to feel energized the next day. And for me, it's around 10 to 10:30 p.m. Anything earlier, I'll wake up at midnight. It's actually so interesting how your body works. Anything earlier, let's say even if it's 9:30, 9:45, I do have friends that go to bed at that time. My body will think it's napping and I'll be wide awake at midnight.
Interesting.
If I go to bed like 11, post 11, then I'll wake up tired. So like that 10 to 10:30 just seems to be my sweet spot. I also have blue light glasses I recently invested in. So if I do need to have some screen time, I've got those on. I will always have hot herbal tea before bed. I still use white noise to this day. Ever since children, I became an incredibly light sleeper. So if I don't have the white noise, I'll be woken up throughout the night. So I have sea sounds playing all night. And then I guess the other thing is, if I've had a really stressful day, I'll make sure I'm doing some sort of breath work before bed. Anything to calm the nervous system. Or like if there's stuff that I know that's like in my 1,000 tabs open in my brain that I'm going to continue to think about, I'll jot them down. I'll just write them down or put them into my notes in my phone just to make sure it's just out of my system. Otherwise, my brain just won't let it go.
I'm also curious to know how you found setting up a business. I think you've alluded to the workload it's brought for you. What do you wish you knew then when you started out that you know now? Any tips, any lessons learned? And we just also love asking founders how they approach branding and marketing.
Yeah, so I guess I already changed career 7 years ago. So with Luca, it wasn't as big a transition as many with others would face, I imagine. And also just Luca was a long time in the making. It took 3 years. So I guess it's been much more of a slow burn to get the product right and fit for purpose in the way that we wanted to. In terms of skills and tips, in terms of like how to approach business and things, my prior career before Women's Health was retail management consulting, and I also used to work for Amazon. So I was leaning a lot on my skill set from that. And actually, I was a bit nervous because it'd been a long time since I'd been doing any of that, but it all comes back quite quickly. Your brain remembers, a bit like riding a bike. So many lessons. I could speak for hours about how many lessons there are to be learnt about starting a business. But I think for me, the biggest thing is don't let perfection be the enemy of progress. I constantly have to say that to myself, because both Joe and I are perfectionists. But that can really hold you back if you're trying to get everything exactly how you want it before you even put it out there. The reality is you need to just get going. You need to test. You need to retest. You actually do need to stumble a few times to be able to learn and tweak as you go. So I think that's hugely important. There's never going to be a right time to do anything. And you need to start getting feedback as quickly as possible. So just do it. I think that's the first thing. And then it can be really isolating being a founder, even with a co-founder. So motivation can be really difficult at times. So I think you just got to get to know yourself and what works for you. In terms of kind of that focus and motivation, for me, it will always come back to some level of movement. So if I'm really struggling to focus, mental block, creativity, whatever, I will always go for a walk. And immediately on that walk, creative thoughts will just start again. So that's really important. If I'm stressed, I'll lift weights. So there's this glorified view that burnout is like this badge of honor. I've been there and I'm not gonna go back. Doesn't suit my lifestyle. I've got two young girls. It's definitely quality over quantity right now.
We also, that kind of leads me on to my last question, which is, we loved your out-of-office bounce back, which I love so much, I'm going to read out. Due to high workload and family life, I'm currently checking and responding to email twice daily at 12 p.m. and 4 p.m. If you need to speak to me urgently, that cannot wait until either of these times, please contact me on my mobile, but do make sure it's urgent. Ah, love that. I have an email signature that explains my own email management. Tell us about the thinking behind this message and more generally your approach to managing your time and just trying to avoid overwhelm. Any, again, top tips there?
Yeah, that actually, I totally forgot that was there. That came about actually a few years ago after I read The 4-Hour Working Week by Tim Ferriss. Have you read that?
No, heard great things though.
Firstly, I wish I could work just 4 hours a week. That's just not possible. But there's a lot of useful stuff in there in terms of how we spend our time just doing unnecessary tasks, doing things that are meant for just instant gratification, like responding to an email. We don't have to do that throughout the entire day, and it takes up so much time. So rather than just having all these time fillers, just understanding ways to work that's more optimal to what you're doing so that you can get time back to do other things. You know what I mean? So time blocking is my number one thing. If it's in my calendar, I will do it. This goes for personal tasks, exercise, my kids, nutrition, everything. So that's one of the biggest things. I think just from a perspective of like how you feel in yourself and what you're achieving, another favorite book of mine is The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. Mm-hmm. This perception that everyone's working to this giant, big thing that's going to happen, this quantum leap or this big bang in your business. But the reality is that's not how it works. And actually, it's just the consistent daily disciplines that you instill in your life work that will then lead to success over time. And he talks about the effects of compound interest, which to me, as like a data person, that makes a huge amount of sense.
Yeah.
So think of it in that way, and then be kind to yourself. Some days I will absolutely smash it, and other days will be a complete disaster. And that is all part of the journey.
So useful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You can find out more at all the W's, rebornactive.com. And do also check out the protein shake range at luco.co/. So that's spelt LOUCO. Plus, you can find both over on socials at Reborn Active and at Luco Health. Thank you so much, Rachel, for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com, and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.